Welcome to We the People.
Good afternoon.
I guess I kind of slurred my words. It's a little early to be drinking. Welcome to We the People. You're joining Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
There you go.
And if you're listening in Philadelphia, good morning.
Good, yeah. Well, they're, yeah.
Good morning, good afternoon,
and it's,
whichever it may be.
They are at WNJC 1360. We are part of the Conservative Commandos Radio Network. We actually are physically in Northern California, and for those of you on the East Coast, it's the other part of California, not the part you see on TV. We're like outside the band of the land of fruits and nuts.
Actually, I
we're in the part with like a lot of trees and lakes and stuff like that. What?
I was slightly incorrect there. It's only morning if you're on the West Coast.
If you're
here, you're listening to Philadelphia.
I know.
Yes.
They're from 1 to 2, so they're in the afternoon too. So, all right. Today, we have a great show for you. You're going to love this. Lots of us are following the issues in Israel, and we're watching what goes on in this tiny little country that's surrounded by a whole bunch of people who want to wipe them out. And I think most of us are aware that they have basically a standing army in that they... is that your phone?
I think
Bill,
that was my
phone. Bill is the weakest link today.
That's my Philadelphia fans trying to call me already.
Yeah.
I told them not to call me.
I think that's probably happening. I grew up in Connecticut. I took Bill back there one time, and they were snippy with him. I told him it's just the way they are.
It's a culture.
I know. It was funny. So anyway, Aviv?
Regev.
Yeah. I keep wanting to change your name. Bob told me how to say it, and I keep being a knucklehead. Aviv is in a film called Beneath the Helmet, and this kind of chronicles a number of young men, and they're young women too, but in this particular thing, it's young men, going from high school to the army. And so we're just going to let you tell us what you'd like to tell us about this particular experience, because it was really interesting.
Very interesting.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure to be with you.
Absolutely. It's taken us months to get a date that we were all available, so I'm really glad it finally happened.
Yeah, well, this extraordinary film, Beneath the Helmet, is really gives an interesting perspective and puts a fresh lens on the Israel Defense Force and the teenagers that that make the Israeli army what it is. The organization that created it, Jerusalem U, was literally on base with us for 8 months. They were filming us during live fire exercises while we were jumping out of planes. We always had cameraman popping out of bushes and windows taking pictures. All this.
Kind of made the training a little more fun, though.
Well, honestly, it's so difficult that you really don't have time to deal with a cameraman. I found myself at the age of 23 in charge of 120 soldiers, 120 human beings. So you literally have your hands full.
Yeah, that's kind of stressful, and they're all just out of high school.
Yeah, for sure. So and so they were really able to capture the process that we go through, the coming of age, really. It's about the difficulties and challenges that we have to face on a day-to-day basis.
And every person at the age of 18 is required to join the military. Is that correct, male and female?
Yes, so for the males, it's 3 mandatory years, and for the girls, it's 2 mandatory years. And the film itself focuses on 5 soldiers, 4 male soldiers and 1 female soldier.
And tell us this. Okay, if everybody knows that they're going into the military when they complete high school, then do you go to college after that? Is that sort of the career track you guys
go
on? So you go to college after.
Yeah. That's how we do it in Israel. We have those two, 3 years of army. It's kind of a gap years,
mm-hmm.
And then we go to the university.
Now, some I'm assuming, like our army and other branches of the military, they stay. Do they decide, you know, they get in there and they realize this is something they want to do for a career and they decide to stay?
So in Israel, it's a bit different. For officers, they can stay longer. I myself stayed for 5 years. And my girlfriend, which was also an officer in the IDF spokesperson's unit, stayed 6 years. But for regular soldiers, they usually do the 3 years, and they don't have an option to continue.
So you have to be an officer to continue, and if you choose to continue, can you make that a life's path? I mean, can you stay for 20 years or whatever you want?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. In some cases, not only officers, but in most instances, it's officers. And you can turn it into a career until you retire at the age of 45, and then you can continue on to do more if you want. For me, it was always clear that I went to the Army by necessity and not by choice. My future is in electrical engineering and physics, and that's what I want to do with my life, and do good through that.
Nice. Because you're in Philadelphia right now, correct?
That's correct. What brought me here really is, if you'd have asked me a year and a half ago when I finished my service, if I'd be going around the States and sharing my story and speaking about Israel and my experiences, I'd think you were crazy. After 5 years, you kind of feel like your life has been on pause and you want to just continue on, with what you think is important in life. And so I found myself doing the SATs in Israel and, going on after the Army trip, across China by myself 2,000 miles, and hiked in New Zealand a few hundred miles. And it was during that time that I met a lot of teenagers my own age from over a dozen countries. And they were asking me a lot of questions about Israel. Naturally, they were interested. But they were ridiculous questions based on propaganda and lies and misconceptions. Mm-hmm. That's when I realized that there was this whole other war going on in international media and politics and on campuses, and that I couldn't sit on the sidelines and watch, and that you don't really need a uniform to defend Israel.
What is the mentality of the average 18-year-old high school student? What do they think about being mandatory to join the military? Are they looking forward to it? Are they dreading it? Do they like the policy? What do they think?
Well, I'm sure I don't need to tell you what 18-year-olds think about. It's mostly booze, partying, and girls.
Yeah.
But it is something that sits in our minds, and everyone, it's like here in the States, everyone's interested in what they're going to study and applying to different colleges and places to start their studies. In Israel, we have tryouts to the Army from 11th grade when you get a letter from the military summon. And you start doing all these tests, some physical, some mental tests. You get a lot of these interviews and physical tryouts, and you get selected into different units. Hmm.
That's just a whole different mindset. Do you find that, and how long have you been in the States? For a while now?
I've been in the States since October. I actually went back to Israel twice for reserve army duty, which every citizen in Israel that was in the army in a combat unit needs to do until the age of 40.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if you're a banker, lawyer, engineer, CEO of a big company. 1 month every year, you put your family, your friends, your job aside, and you come back to the army.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I did not know that either.
For a month, huh?
Well, I bet our kids, our 17 and 18-year-old kids, probably seem really immature. I'll just say it. It's probably rude if you say it, but I can say it, and you can just, nod silently. But
you don't realize the difference until you actually come out of that bubble in Israel, because it seems ordinary when you're back home.
Sure,
when
you come
grow here,
fast.
You still need to see the difference.
Well,
I think it has to do a lot with the responsibility that we find ourselves having at such a young age.
Couple of things that I got from the film. First one was as these kids are enlisted, watching them develop a sense of patriotic awareness.
Sure.
And then also, as a result of everybody being in the military, the sense of community. Your entire community supports your kids that are in the military. They all know what they're going through, and they support them through the process. Did I get that right? I mean, is that kind of the general census?
For sure. And I've been getting a lot of questions, I think mostly after the film American Sniper came out. about post-traumatic stress. And in Israel, although it exists in much slower quantities because of that involvement of the community, because your father was in the army, your brothers were in the army, your neighbors were. So you're in a very, it's in your society. Everyone knows what you talk about when you come back home. It's not something very far away across the ocean. And whenever something happens, everyone hears about it in the news. When I go on a combat operation on one of the Israeli borders, I know that only 2-3 miles from there, there's a village, one of my country's villages. And if I won't be in that spot, in that place, my citizens, my people will get hurt.
See, it's an amazing sense of national awareness and pride, and you have a great you don't have the whole dissenter problem like we do here. You have all these people who have weird misconceptions about what's going on in the world. You live in the part of the world that is constantly in the news. We're going to come back with you and talk about this a little bit further. Take a really quick break here. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Aviv, who is in the film Beneath the Helmet, from high school to home to the home front. You will love it. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed. Oh, me
Israelite,
sir. Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed.
Welcome back to We the People. Our topic today is a film called Beneath the Helmet. I just want to put a little blurb in here about the synopsis before we get back to our guest. It says, from the creators of the PBS featured documentary from Israel, film Israel Inside, How a Small Nation Makes a Big Difference, Beneath the Helmet illustrates how these young men and women are defending not only their homes, but also the values of peace, equality, opportunity, democracy, religious tolerance, and women's rights. The lessons they learn along the way are lessons that can be appreciated, understood, and internalized by the film's main target audience. I'll tell you what, the promotion of your the way your country is organized and the way you defend yourselves is really unique. Is there any other country that does this, Aviv?
Well, not to my knowledge.
Okay. I didn't think so. But I think it's really, I think it really changes the way you guys look at your country. I think it probably makes your country a lot more patriotic.
I think it definitely does, goes a long way into doing that. As you said earlier, before we went on the break, I think we do have our fair share of crazy in Israel too, and
oh, darn it!
And you know what? We are one of the maybe the only country in the world that can't afford making a mistake, because when that day comes, Israel will cease to exist. So we don't have that privilege, you know, in many instances.
You know, we see over here on the news. Of course, our news is bought and paid for. I think everybody knows, but. We see a anti-military movement every now and then on the news in Israel. How big is that idea over there? Are the folks that don't like the military? Are there a lot of them over there? Or do most of your folks realize that you have to have a strong military?
It's a necessity.
A necessity,
well,
yeah.
There's a few aspects to that question. First of all, for every two Jews you put in the room, you have at least three or four opinions. And being a democracy,
they come from their mothers.
which I think is a positive thing, to have a discussion and debate and not agree on things. That's okay. That's how it should be. These anti-military groups and it could be anti-military, anti-capitalism, anti-Netanyahu, as we've seen this last few months.
Oh yeah, I want to get to that.
So there's a lot of different anti-groups, and I think that in the end, common sense prevailed, and we saw in these last elections that there's still a very strong support for if it's Netanyahu and if it's the way Israel, I think at least, should run, which is maybe a bit more to the right.
Now, how many people do you have in your army? I don't mean like the actual number, but
What is the size of your military?
Right, but I was curious how many of them don't come from Israel. Don't you have people from outside the country who do come and fight?
Yeah, we do. I'd say about 11,000, not from Israel.
No kidding.
And how big about is your ground force?
About half of them from the United States.
That's pretty awesome.
And do you know the size of your ground force, or is that something they kind of keep?
I can tell you whatever's on the internet, which is about 150,000 is the active duty, and about three times as much in reserves.
Sure, and then you think about it, everybody who's living there is fully trained and gets an update regularly. That makes a huge difference.
That's our main military force. It's the reserves, not the regular active duty soldiers.
Sure.
Now, as far as your active duty soldiers, you mentioned you just had an election. What is the the sentiment as far as your president now is? Do they have?
I bet your military likes him.
Yeah. Do they like him? Do they have his? Or does he have their support?
Well, I can tell you what I think. To tell you what
we only care what you think.
150,000 soldiers think is kind of difficult.
Well, I know what our soldiers think about our president, but that's a whole different story.
Well, ours is a prime minister, but I think that in the Army we have a very healthy norm that politics doesn't go through the gate. And what that means is that as an officer, I would not speak about my political beliefs at all with my subordinates. And if I'd hear any one of the command or the 17 commanders under me speaking about his political views, I'd punish him severely. Mm. The same would go to the soldiers. Because I know it sounds a bit mind-boggling in the States. Maybe the only topic we talk about more than politics is the weather or sports. but in Israel, it's very strict. Because we're at such a young age in the Army, it could have a very big impact on their worldview, and we do not want to brainwash anyone, and we do not want to have any kind of impact on what they think.
Well, that's kind of great, actually. And yet, we saw the interview, I forget, I think it was in the trailer where that girl stood up and was asking questions and basically was pro-Palestine and anti-Israel. And that's, how much of that do you see now that you're out of the military and especially over here?
Well, I was accepted to the Technion University in Israel, which is like the MIT here, for a dual degree in electrical engineering and physics, and I was already supposed to start, and I put that on hold and came here because of that, because I've been hearing a lot of anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, and a lot of lies and propaganda that have been said.
And do you find that really prevalent here as well? Or do we just see a lot of it on the news? I mean, it seems like we see tons of that
for
all the time.
For sure. I've come across it in a lot of different places. In a lot of instances, it's ignorance. And in a lot of other places, it's a lot of lies that have been left unchallenged, and they've become common knowledge. I think that's one of our most important things we need to do, is to challenge these lies so that they don't become the truth. Because a lie left unchallenged becomes the truth. That's what's been happening.
Absolutely. And so if we were going to click off a list of those, where would you start? What's the biggest one that is just, if you could just erase it, it would be great.
Well, I've got all sorts of questions on all the spectrum of crazy, from do we go to school on camelbacks and through someone that told me he knows everything about the Israeli politics. And I was like, okay, well, let's get started. Shoot, you know. And he was like, what I don't understand is why there's the Palestinian conflict when everyone knows it's because you limit the fishing in Gaza. Stop limiting the fishing and you'll solve the whole problem. I'm like, what, really?
Wow.
That's the reason? It was actually in San Francisco, that specific.
Oh, yeah, that kind of explains a lot.
Like, go Google it, you know what? I'm not going to even bother. And on the other hand, there's a lot of name-calling and things like that, like apartheid, which every time I hear that, I'm personally offended for South Africa, that those that did suffer this type of regime, which discriminated based on color. You had different hospitals for black and white. You had different, blacks couldn't vote. They had different public transportations. And in Israel, that's not the case. There's a few Arab parties and representatives that just got elected and are in our parliament. There's doctors, lawyers, CEOs. They're not discriminated in any way. So that's something that's been thrown quite a lot around. There's even apartheid week on campuses.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I know they tried to make that an issue in the last election over here in our news, that there was some discriminatory statements made about the Arab vote, which I thought was really ridiculous.
You know what? If anything, the Arabs have more rights than duties in Israel because they're not required to serve in the army. And so they do less. They can go to university earlier, can start their studies, their careers earlier. You'll find them in all the top universities, really as equals.
And so you have a fairly large segment of the population that's Arab that are not citizens.
That just live in Israel.
That just live in Israel. They have citizenship. Some of them actually volunteer to serve in the army,
Interesting. Which
I think is beautiful. We have Druze, which are not Muslim per se. It's a different sect in Islam. We have desert nomads, which also serve.
So you don't have to be a citizen to serve.
No. They're all citizens.
You have to be a citizen.
Okay.
All right. We've got to come back and clarify that because we're kind of knuckleheads. We need all the education we can get. We're happy to hear your opinions and thoughts, both. We're going to come back with Aviv. We're talking about the film Beneath the Helmet, From High School to the Home Front, but we're also talking about just the concept of Israel and what's going on there. We'll be back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. See it right now, man. You gotta teach about freedom. Gotta win it. Gotta put yourself smack dab in it.
You're listening to We the People Radio on AM 1460, Community Talk Radio for the North State, KCNR.
Welcome back to We the People. You're joining Aaron, Bill, and Bob. Our guest is Aviv Regev from Beneath the Helmet. It's a film. You can actually watch it online, which is what we did, at beneaththehelmet.com. The link is on the website. And Aviv is a lieutenant. As a deputy platoon commander in the 101st Paratrooper Brigade, he was responsible for the safety and logistic needs of his soldiers. Grew up in the Golan Heights and spent several years in New Jersey when he was a child. At 23, he was in charge of 120 soldiers and was Eden Adler's direct commander. That's one of the guys in the movie. Having now completed his Army service, Aviv will be... Now, this says you're commencing studies in Haifa, but that's not actually true. You're in Philadelphia. So I think maybe my intel is incorrect here.
No, it's correct. I got accepted to the Technion, which is in Haifa, and I postponed it by a year. So I'm going to be starting there this coming October.
Oh, okay. All right. So we're still right. Well,
so you're right on.
Okay. So what else are we missing here that we get such a weird, you know, skewing of the news? What?
Well, we don't.
What else
get
do we
news.
Need to know besides watching the movie, which is obviously very good?
Well, I think that what people maybe sometimes, because of what the media decides to show and a lot of the negative aspects it focuses on, people don't realize that in the end we're really teenagers with hopes and dreams and even fears, and what we really want is to live our lives in peace and happiness.
You know, I saw that in the movie too. These kids that joined the army, I mean, they. You know, a lot of them never handled a weapon before. It's not like they grow up, you know, like a lot of kids in this country, they grow up with a gun, they hunt, they do all this stuff. And in Israel, a lot of these kids never touched a gun before they joined the military. And it was amazing to see the transformation and how quickly they adapted to what they had to do. And it was
well. They're in their own
inspiring.
Country, protecting their own country,
that's
which
right.
is different. They're not being sent to a foreign place.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up because it's important. And I said that earlier that we go to the army by necessity, not by choice. And that's another misconception out there. We don't hate the enemy. We don't hate the people that we need to fight. We go to the army because we want to protect our own, our family, and our people, and our country. And that's what gives us a lot of strength, and that's why we go and do what needs to be done. Not because we hate anyone or because we want to do anyone harm. That's why it's called the IDF, Israel Defense Force, and not the Israel Attack Force. We just want to defend and protect what is ours.
And you know, I'm really glad you said that because the perception in our media a lot of times is Israel has all the latest technology. They have, you know, the education, and they're really out there just expanding and trying to push their borders out, and that's really not the case, is it?
It's really far from the truth, and just as an example, you could look at this summer and what happened this summer and how Israel did everything in its power to avoid confrontation and. While a terrorist organization, Hamas, did everything in its power to lead cynically and irresponsibly its own people into a war, which is tragic, and I wouldn't wish that for anyone. And while that operation already started, it was doing everything in its power to maximize the casualties and use its own people as human shields. 162 of their own children died digging terror tunnels. They were buried alive, their own children, because of these confrontations. And on the other hand, you see Israel using all its advancements, all the technology that it has to minimize those casualties, if it's to call buildings before they're bombed, if it's to throw out flyers out of planes, if it's to cancel missions because of the amount of casualties that could... result in it. So the question really is, you know, who is really responsible for the way that things are going are happening, and who ultimately in the end needs to change its worldview in order to us to really have peace.
Well, I think that's one of the things personally I respect about Israel is when they finally decide it's time to fight back. They've, I think, let the situation go a lot longer than I think in a lot of other countries would let it go. But then when they decide it's time to fight back and stop the threat, there's no fooling around with it. It's not a political war, which is something I think our country really needs to learn from. If you're going to go to war, the purpose is to win and get it over with as little loss of life as possible, and then you're done. These drug out 5-year
well,
engagements
where we don't really fight
anybody.
It's
yeah,
just
we don't really go
up.
In there to win. It's just it ends up costing a lot more lives, and Israel doesn't do that, do they?
Well, Israel had its fair share of burns, you could say. We were in Lebanon for quite a while, for almost 18 years, and that's not something we want to do again. I do agree with you on that, and it's, I think, very important to do the things strategically and exactly what's necessary and not more than that. And I do like to see that my government takes responsibility and does it very cautiously and doesn't, you know, just run off into any war there is. But what we do need to realize, and that's also another misconception out there, that every terror attack, every rocket in Israel, because it's such a small country, is a strategic attack. For example, here, if there's a terrorist attack in New Jersey, God forbid, no one will feel it in Colorado.
True.
This summer, a few rockets put 3.5 million citizens into bomb shelters for the whole summer. Now, that might not sound as a lot, but that's half of Israel.
That's a lot.
Try to imagine half of the United States in bomb shelters for the whole summer.
And see, that's what people don't realize is, I mean, if we only had one city in this country that had to hide in bomb shelters for more than one
night. That was getting shelled on a regular basis.
That was getting shelled.
People would flip.
People would freak out. And yet, you folks go through this on a regular basis.
That's one. That was one really good thing I thought about in the movie, and I don't remember. I don't remember which guy it was, but he was saying that his bedroom was the bomb shelter in the family home, and he showed the the steel plate that closes off the window, and the walls were really thick. And he said it was great as a kid because if he heard, you know, the loud noises outside, he knew that he was in the right room, and then the family would run in there and be in his room. And I thought, how weird for a little kid to feel safe because he's sleeping in the bomb shelter of their house. I mean, that's like, it was super normal to him. And as I'm listening, I'm thinking, oh, honey, you know, that's not exactly what everybody else is having to deal with. It's a different program altogether.
Yeah, it's a different world.
So when you come here and you just, you just get to wander around and you know you're not getting shelled at all, is it a little weird? Is it kind of great?
I feel safe in Israel. I have to say that. That's another, if we're already talking about all those things, you feel safe in Israel.
Oh, I bet you do. Seriously.
When you walk in Tel Aviv, it feels just as safe as walking in Wall Street or in Miami or in Vegas. It feels safe. And that's something that, thanks to our very strong army and a lot of intelligence, and a lot of the way that everything is built around these threats, that you don't really come across them in the day-to-day life.
Oh, yeah, I bet it feels really safe.
That's interesting because
the whole population is trained,
well-trained. But yet somebody on the chat here said that, you know, before they die, they want to visit the Holy Land. And I think to myself, I would like to do that too, but would I be safe? And I know a lot of people that have gone over there and never had a problem, but I think when we're inundated with our media with just all the negative that goes on over there, you tend to think that's the last place on earth I'd want to go on vacation. But now you're telling me you feel safe there, and that surprises me.
Completely safe, especially when I know there's such a strong army out there protecting me. And even this last summer, completely safe. Of course, that if you run into Gaza or something like that, no one can guarantee your safety. But as long as you're in the metropolitan area, in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv, and 95% of Israel, you won't even come across anything.
Isn't that interesting? And you guys, Do all the people own guns, I'm assuming? If you're all in the military, everyone knows how to use them. Do people own guns or not?
On the contrary, it's actually very difficult to have a gun in Israel if you're not serving currently in the army.
Oh, really?
And if you are serving in the army, only if you're in a combat unit, after a certain amount of time, you'll be allowed to go home with that gun. And other than that, you'd have to have a special circumstance, either live in a dangerous area or work in security for you to carry a gun. And that's something that's quite different than what we have here in the States.
A
few months ago, an ad for a bank account. If you open a bank account, you get a free shotgun. So quite different.
Yeah, welcome to America.
That's funny because I remember seeing a a video
I
one
remember,
time.
I know what you're going to say.
There was a loud noise in a store in Israel, and everybody whipped out their pistols. So that's not true. Everybody isn't packing over there, huh?
Well, there are. You'll see a lot of people on the streets with guns, but it's not that every citizen owns a gun. I can tell you in my family, no one owns a gun.
But they actually know how to use them, so that, I don't know which is better, to have them or know how to use them, because I'm thinking know how to use them is probably a bonus. Interesting.
That's for sure.
So, okay, so I don't know, do we have to take a break? Are we ready for that? I know we have one more to fit
in
here.
Yeah, we can do it now.
All right, let's do one more quick break, and then we have Aviv till the top of the hour, and then he probably has a life to go live. We won't hog up his whole day here. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
And we're back. You're joining We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You have everything about today's guest and the film, Beneath the Helmet. I think that you'll find it to be incredibly interesting. And the website, beneaththehelmet.com, has a ton of information, has all sorts of bios on all the guys that were in the movie and gals, where you can go to screenings, communities, high schools, campuses. It's got a great soundtrack, actually. The movie has got a very interesting soundtrack. There's some good information about that. You can watch the trailer. You can watch it online for like $2.99. I think you can buy it. I think it was $9.99. You can actually buy it. And well worth watching. It really gives you a look at what goes on in Israel and the Israel Defense Force, how it's comprised, that these kids go from high school to the military and then back to real life again. It's a view that you don't get anywhere else, I don't think. How did you wind up involved in this film, Aviv?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, I don't know, maybe in the description you were saying, it's beneaththehelmet.com. There's mm-hmm. no the in between. Because of the
it actually,
www.beneaththehelmet.com.
Oh, so you're right. I've been typing in Beneath the Helmet, but I think it was correcting it when I went in. Good call. Thank you.
Yeah, just so people know how to get there.
Yeah, I'll fix that.
They can also see where there's screenings nearby, or if they want one in their community, church group or synagogue, they can also apply for that there. I got involved really on the first day of training when I recruited 120 soldiers right out of high school. I had these cameramen popping out of bushes and from, taking pictures from windows and from all over the place, really. And they had all the right paperwork and all the right authorizations. And from that point on, they were with us for 8 months, literally filming us the whole way. And I think I really feel like I, tagged along for the ride, but the amazing people that actually made this happen and had the vision 3 years ago to see how relevant this kind of film would be today are or Jerusalem U and its founder, Rafael Shore, the CEO and founder of the organization that came up with this idea. And so I'm very grateful that they put this film into motion, because it's definitely something that's not been shown and talked about.
Exactly. When did you start with this? How long ago?
I started in October to go around the States with the film.
Right on. And when they approached you and started filming, how long ago was that?
That was March 2013.
Okay, so it takes a little while to get these done.
Yeah.
But the timing couldn't be better, honestly, for
sure.
You to be traveling here.
Unbelievable.
When you travel about and give your talks, do you get a pretty good turnout?
It depends where and when. I've been to 25 universities so far, 60 communities.
Oh, wow.
And at least 50 radio shows. I'd say that in the universities, it depends on the week, if they're having exams that week, if it's finals or just after, the break or something like that, would be anywhere between 100 and 10 students. But you know what? I'd even come for one, because that's all it takes to impact one person's life. And
well,
that
really
that
doesn't
goes.
Surprise me, those kind of numbers at a university in this country. Our universities are so liberal that any kind of a military subject.
Do they ever wind up protesting you or things like that?
Not really. I've had a
Good.
Few people come to say their opinions or to just give these these name callings and things like that. But I tell them I know how to deal with that. I tell them that I've put off a year of my studies by a year to come and give answers. And that I understand that the United States is based on the freedom of speech and sharing of ideas. And if they want to come and ask questions and we can talk about it and debate about it, that's great. If they came to toss accusations, they can do that too and leave. Don't waste anyone's time. I know students have been putting off homework and tests to come here. So
that's pretty good.
That usually solves it.
Nice.
If not that, then pressure from their peers.
What's the biggest misconception that you find here about this whole idea of, because it's a very new idea, if we would have people reinstitute the draft and kids would go into the Army right after high school?
Well, I think that we need to realize in that regard that you can only cut the pie so many ways. Your army, the Army of the United States, is roughly 2 million soldiers right now. If you turn it into a draft like in Israel, it would be 27 million soldiers. So that's quite a lot of money going into training, equipment, and then deploying these soldiers.
Sure.
Which there's controversy on how you deploy these 2 million soldiers. Now there will be 27 million. And that will affect education, the economy, the health system, if there is one.
Yeah, that'd be a huge budget there.
Yeah, that was a quick thing I thought of a while back. We've got a few minutes left. I was curious, do you guys have anything equivalent to our Veterans Administration or something like that? Are there benefits for you when you get out? Do they pay for your schooling, or is it just like, see ya, go back to real life?
For sure, it's very appreciated in the Israeli society to have served in a combat unit. Have served it all, and especially in a combat unit, if it's scholarships or even getting to into the university, if it's finding a job. You know what? Even with the girls, it's something that helps in the Israeli society. It really opens up a lot of doors, and you could say it's for a lot of teenagers, it's really a ticket into their adult lives.
Interesting. And so if you are injured in the military, like here, they go into the Veterans Administration system, which is something we talk about quite a bit and is kind of broken at the moment. Do you have that, or are you just funneled back into regular life, regular medical care, that kind of thing?
We definitely have that. And if you are going to get injured in Israel, you want to do that in the Army, you'll get taken care of very well.
That's cool. And that system works pretty well on your end.
That's from my experience. I'm sure that, you know, there's ups
sure.
and downs and nothing's perfect.
Sure.
But from what I know and from the soldiers that are my friends that have been injured, they've been taken care of very well. Very, very well.
That's excellent.
That's great.
We can learn a lot from you guys. You do a great job with your airports. Your military is well run. And I know they're really feared. My brother is retired Special Forces, and he said your guys had a great reputation. Well, great for you because people go, uh-oh, you know, the Israeli army's coming. So that's awesome.
I think it's because of the way we train our soldiers. We focus a lot more on the mental capacity and why we do things, on the motivation, and that gives a lot of strength to realize that you're doing things because you want to protect your own and your people and your family, and not because of any other reason out there. And so a lot of our training revolves around that, just to realize, to make our soldiers realize that their mental barriers are not what they seem, and that there is really no limit to what you can do. And that's why we're considered such a good army, and that's why we'll walk further than anyone else, and we'll carry more weight, and at the end of the day, we'll get the job done.
That is fantastic. We so appreciate you spending the afternoon with
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
And I hope you enjoy your travels in the U.S. if you're we'll watch on beneathhelmet.com. There, the is not there. It's beneathhelmet.com, and you can see where the screenings are around the country. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Aaron,
thank
Bill.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank
you
for joining
Aviv.
Us.
We really appreciate
it.
We hope to talk to you again on a different day.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.